Hello, and welcome to Talk From Superheroes. Hey, everybody, I'm Andrew Iveme.
And I'm, well, me, Diana McCollum.
That's Diana McCollum over there.
Old Diana over here.
Sucking on a Werther's Original, just biding the time. That's old Diana McCollum over there.
We're all just getting old. We're all getting older.
Hey.
No one's getting younger.
No one's, not a one of us.
Unless Benjamin Button's a real guy, and maybe Paul Rudd.
Oh.
No one else.
I was actually going to say maybe Ant-Man going through the quantum tunnel before they had figured it out yet.
But that, also that, Paul Rudd.
Then you're getting younger. Mm-hmm. Sometimes. Mm-hmm. Sometimes
so
you're getting older.
Way.
Sometimes you're a baby in a spacesuit.
Either way, Paul Rudd.
Yeah.
Either way. No matter what.
You know what? You know what? I think most things in this world, just bet on Rudd. Yeah.
If you had Rudd for Sexiest Man Alive this year, you must have made so much money. Who saw that coming?
Paul Rudd. You bet on Rudd.
I don't think Paul Rudd saw it coming. I don't think he thought he was in the running.
I still would have bet on Rudd.
He's too modest.
I'm not a gambling man, though, is my thing.
We don't gamble on Sexiest Man, and we never will.
That is one of the tests.
Hard rules.
That is a hard. We have it carved in stone on the wall here at the network, at the recording studio.
Never bet on Sexiest Man Alive.
Never bet on Sexiest Man Alive. And then the second one is always bet on Paul Rudd. Those are the commandments. But you know, you can't combine those.
Can't
two.
Combine them. What are we doing this week, Andrew?
This week we are doing this week and next week we are doing host favorites because things have shifted around. Movies are moving again.
Movies
were like, you thought we were back? Ha ha! Gotcha.
They're like, stick and move. Can't catch us. You can't watch us. Ha!
Doing a little shimmy, dancing away. You don't know what movies are going to do. So movies, we thought they were back. They are not our friend. They are gone. So we had to make some changes to the schedule last minute. So we've decided to switch it up, and we are doing host favorites, which is something we've done in the past. And this week is going to be an Andrew favorite. Next week is going to be a Diana favorite. But this week, we're talking about that Andrew heat. We're talking about Rumble in the Bronx this week.
This is so exciting because I feel like we bring up Jackie Chan a lot, and we've never done a Jackie Chan movie.
We've never done a Jackie Chan movie.
It seems like a crime. A crime against cinema,
yeah.
A crime against Jackie, a man we love, and I'm really glad that we finally decided to be the ones to recognize Jackie Chan for his greatness. The first ones, some say.
The first ones, no one else has recognized Jackie Chan for the greatness that he is. It's just us.
It's just us. We're going to let you guys know.
And even then, we're wildly late.
It's been
by
a few
our own
years.
Admittance.
We've been doing this podcast for a bit.
Y'all hear about this up-and-comer called Jackie Chan?
We think he's gonna be big.
I want to break the news to you about this up-and-comer called Jackie Chan.
You know that new sound you've been looking for?
Well, listen to this. I don't know why I like became a high-pitched person, but that's just who I become when I get excited about Jackie Chan.
This will be very, very fun. So yes, Andrew's picks. I love like the little insights into what we love and who we are.
Yes, so we're gonna be doing favorites, and you know, not even necessarily favorites, not best favorites, because we're talking about Rumble in the Bronx this week. It's a Jackie Chan movie. I love Jackie Chan films. Rumble in the Bronx is not necessarily Jackie Chan's best. I love it, and it is good. I'm gonna have a lot of positive things to say about it. It's not academically its best. You know, it's not as good as either of the Drunken Masters, I would say. It's not as compelling as, like, the Police Story movies. There's, you know, it's not as out there as, like, Project A, where it's like, what if he's Indiana Jones? Like,
it doesn't have the budget of a Rush Hour.
It's not full in on Jackie Chan, Hollywood action star. It's not classic Hong Kong cinema. It exists between these two worlds. But it's just one that I have such a fondness for. It was the first one that introduced me and the majority of North America to Jackie Chan because I was 10 when this came out. So even though, you know, some of his Hong Kong stuff I think is better, when I was 10, I wasn't like, I preferred the imports of Jackie Chan's earlier Police Story. I really enjoyed the early 80s Drunken Master movie.
Andrew watches the dubs, not subs.
Yeah, that's right. I was 8 years old and I had like an overseas hookup shipping things over pre-internet.
On VHS.
On VHS. No, that was not happening. So yeah, this is just like
to Newfoundland.
This is, yeah.
Not even a mainland.
Just an island, just right off there. So it's just the worst geographic possible location to get imports from.
Andrew's in an igloo trying to find out who Jackie Chan is, guys.
Awful stuff. But yeah, Rumble in the Bronx is just something that is one of my and the majority of North America's introduction to Jackie Chan. It has a lot of the positive stuff about both eras of Jackie's career, and something that I think is just terribly fun. And one thing that I love about this and every Jackie Chan movie, and I really could have selected any of them for this, is that it is such a communal project. Mm. When you watch a Jackie Chan movie, like, Jackie Chan movies aren't auteur films. Like, even though Jackie is, like, the celebrity and the one that we all know and we know he's doing his own stunts, but, like, Jackie gives just as much credit to the crazy stuff he's doing to the directors, to his stunt team. The amount of times Jackie is taking full stunt teams from movie to movie and trying to put them on a pedestal and raise them up. It really feels like a community making a film, and I've just never been a fan of auteur, I'm the one brilliant person no one can question filmmaking. And it's just something about the fact, too, that, like, it's recorded in a bunch of languages, then rewritten and overdubbed. So even when people are speaking the same language, they're dubbed over with sometimes entirely new dialogue that doesn't sync. And it is just the most, like, let's not give a fuck, have fun. And I like that about this era of Jackie Chan.
I like that a lot, too. I get what you're saying about the communal thing. I think I feel it when you watch the, like, stunts going wrong at the end. Because every time a stunt goes wrong, everyone runs in. Like, not just the stunt team and not just, like, the medical people. Like, everyone on the set is worried and involved. Like, there's no extras who are like, I'm not part of this and I will stand back. Like, everyone rushes in when a stunt's gone wrong or when it's gone right and they're celebrating. And it does feel like a community, even just from that little behind-the-scenes shots.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, it's nice.
It's nice.
It's nice.
It's nice. So we're going to be discussing one of Andrew's favorites this week. We're going to be discussing Rumble in the Bronx. But before we do get into the episode proper, we want to thank our wonderful sponsor of today's episode. We want to thank our friends over at Masterclass.
Masterclass is so wonderful. With Masterclass, you can learn from the world's best minds anytime, anywhere, and at your own pace. So the absolute masters of anything you want to learn have made incredible courses on Masterclass that you can take in and watch. It's so wonderful.
It's over 100 plus brilliant minds available anytime, anywhere. I love it. I've been checking out their catalog and just brilliant names after brilliant names. One that I started watching and learning from this week was they have Nancy Cartwright, who our listeners might know famously as the voice of Bart on The Simpsons. So,
famous Bart.
Famous Bart.
The most famous Bart, perhaps.
I'm going to say, yeah, the most. They have Nancy Cartwright, the most famous Bart, and a voice actor who has been a successful voice actor playing the same character for 30 years, which is an insane amount of time of expertise and knowledge. And Nancy, she teaches a class on voice acting, and it is absolutely phenomenal. Like, this is something that I do voice acting. I love voice acting. This is something that 10 years ago I had to, like, kick and scream and scrape together these pieces of information from different classes, seminars, different sources, whatever I could get my hands on. And now it's just, it's right there. Like, I'm watching and I'm like, this is legitimately everything that you need. I've had people ask me, like, how do you get into voice acting? How do I break into this realm? And now the quickest and simplest answer for me is to be like, Nancy Cartwright on Masterclass is giving you everything.
Yeah, there are so many incredible ones. There's Cooking with Gordon Ramsay is one I want to do. Comedy with Judd Apatow. Comedy with Steve Martin. Those are two separate classes. I saw one. I haven't done it yet. It's Wilderness Survival with Jesse Krebs. And we just finished Yellow Jackets. So I'm like, doesn't hurt.
Wouldn't hurt to get some wilderness survival.
You know how the back of your mind. But the course I have taken is fantasy and sci-fi writing with N.K. Jemisin, the 3-time Hugo Award winner. And it's absolutely incredible. Like, the courses are like 10 minutes each for each little lesson. So they're very digestible. Like, I do them, I listen to them while I'm Photoshopping like this week's text, and I can really take it in. And she's such an expert and they're so incredibly well done. And there's downloadable materials for every course. So, like, you watch it, but then you also have this, like, materials to take with you if you want to go back. You can take notes as you watch, which I absolutely, the little note feature. I love that.
The little notepad feature on the side is so handy.
I feel like I am learning for fun, and I haven't done that in so long.
Because
it's
like,
so great.
Because like I've taken courses like through other mediums in the past, and it's like, okay, get your notepad, get five other tabs and windows open. Mm-mm-mm-mm-mm. And Masterclass has figured out the interface just to be like, boom, boom, pow. Here is everything that you need in one window,
yeah,
ready to go. And you can jump around, you can change the order. Like if you feel like maybe there's, you know, an introduction that you might not necessarily need at your skill set, you can skip ahead a couple of classes. So you can learn like at your own pace, at your own time, jumping around with cinema quality stuff too. Like the Nancy Cartwright one that I'm watching, it's expertly produced. But the other thing that they're doing is she takes you through the creation of animated characters and how she would approach. And to do it, they've wholly created an animated show from scratch.
Whoa.
With original characters. And she is approaching and breaking down, here's how I would create it, here's how I would record it. And these are fully animated and prepared and ready to go. Like it is a show within a show just to teach you about how to make a voice for the show. It's fantastic production.
Absolutely amazing is that you're definitely not the only one they've done that before, because N.K. Jemisin goes through world building and fantasy in hers, and she builds a world from scratch in her class. And I was like, I am enthralled. Wonderful.
And that gives you so much more faith in the instructors when instructors are going through the process with you and not necessarily, yes, they are teaching it to you academically, but they're teaching it to you in practice as well. And I always find that that's a way better form of education. And Masterclass has it. So we highly recommend that you check it out. Get unlimited access to every Masterclass. As a Talk From Superheroes listener, you get 15% off an annual membership. Go to masterclass.com/TFS. That's masterclass.com/TFS. For 15% off Masterclass. And thank you for sponsoring this episode.
Thank you so much, Masterclass.
And now let's get into our episode. Let's talk about Rumble in the Bronx. We have seen Rumble in the Bronx. Neither of us our first time. Me for the manyth, you for the at least a couple. We got two.
It's the second time I've seen it.
We know it's one of my favorites. But Diana, how did you feel about it? Did you like it?
I did like it. I really like Rumble in the Bronx. It's rough and raw in a lot of ways, but it's very enjoyable. It is this, it shouldn't work, but it's this weird mix of very wholesome and oddly dark that actually doesn't really feel like it vibes together, but it makes kind of a very memorable viewing experience. You're like, for the first 20 minutes, you're like, oh, it's just going to be like a pleasant, nice movie where Jackie Chan is wholesome. And you're like, oh, it got really dark for a minute there.
A man went into a wood chipper.
They threw bottles at Jackie Chan and he was bloody and I didn't like it. So then it goes dark, but they all kind of mix in a way that you're like, oh, wow, I am enthralled. It never just stays as one thing. And the stunts are incredible. And Jackie Chan is amazing. And there's a lot of great side characters. Danny the little brother really sticks out. He's incredible. There's a lot to like here. It's not a love. There's not enough kind of character arc and story for it to be a love for me. Those are very important to me, but it's a classic Jackie Chan that is very, very good. And Jackie is incredibly talented and very cute in this movie. He looks amazing. I can't wait to talk about Jackie's fashions and Jackie's stunts equally. but I don't know if I have to ask you if you like it. It's your favorites.
It's
a silly thing to ask.
It's one of my favorites. Obviously, I do like it.
Well, that's shocking.
I like it very much.
Andrew likes it.
I agree with you that it doesn't have the character arc or the writing necessarily of a lot of the movies that we typically enjoy, that I typically enjoy. I think both of us have a very similar preference sometimes when it comes to movies, which is we're writer first. We're story driven in terms of what our personal preference are. We can appreciate good visuals, but we we worship the writer more than we worship directors.
We do.
Some people are visual fans of film. We're more fans of the writing.
Yeah, when we do What Would You Change at the end, we're never like, the director should have done a dolly shot. We're very much from a writer's standpoint of the what would you change and how we watch a movie.
So it's a little strange for this to be one of my favorites and one that I love so much because I agree with you. It doesn't have the character arc. The story beats aren't necessarily there, even though there are actually some good bones within this of what creates a fun story and a series of events. But I think it is just the most unpretentious good film that's ever been made. It is completely unpretentious in every aspect of cinema. Like just the fact that it... The fact that it's Rumble in the Bronx, and people joke about this movie, people joked when we were tweeting about it, that, like, it's visibly filmed in Vancouver.
Even if you don't know it's Vancouver, you know it's not New York. Like, you do not get New York vibes from anything that happens.
If you were an adult, when I saw this on VHS and I was a 10-year-old living in Newfoundland, I was like, that's obviously the Bronx.
It's so much bigger than Newfoundland. That must be the Bronx.
The Bronx. This was my first, this was the definitive Bronx experience to me as a 10-year-old living in Newfoundland.
You must have watched other things. You watched Seinfeld.
Yeah,
he's not in the Bronx.
Yeah, they're in Manhattan. They're not in the Bronx. I'm like, yeah, once you get to the Bronx, you can see the mountains. It's the Bronx, baby.
Once you get to the Bronx, you got President's Choice Soda. You're in the Bronx,
it's
baby.
The Bronx, baby. But this is what I'm saying. It's so unpretentious just in the fact that, like, the mountains are in the background. It's visibly Vancouver. Who gives a shit? We're calling this movie Rumble in the Bronx. Like, this is Vancouver playing the Bronx, and we barely tried. And, like, just, like, reading up on this film, it's like, well, we had two different, you know, it was a film shot with a relatively limited budget, though very big for where Jackie Chan's career was at the time, but relatively limited in the scope of American movies. And it was just like, where do we want to put the time and effort? And one was sets and really hiding that it's Vancouver, or we could have all of our cast and crew put that effort into preparing the next day's action scene. And they were like, that's what matters.
Yeah, obviously.
And just shit like that where it's like, let's unpretentious filmmaking. To be like, what do people actually give a fuck about? We don't care if 30 years from now social media is invented and people goof on mountains in the background of Rumble in the Bronx. Does Jackie do a crazy slide under a pinball machine to a flip up through a shopping cart? Yeah, that's where we put the time and effort. But like, there is a lot of heart and time and effort in all of the right and least pretentious places, and I love that about this movie.
Yeah, and I think you're touching on why it's good, even though from a writer's perspective, it's not like a solid script, because it's not trying to be a solid script. Jackie, I think, goes to his movies of, what do we build stunts around?
Mm-hmm.
And the stunts tell a story. It's always moving the story forward, and that's always very impressive. It's not just like stop and do stunts and the movie starts again. But it is a very stunt-based form of filmmaking. So if the story isn't quite there, it doesn't really matter as much. If it was a bad movie, it would be bad stunts and you can see the mountains. But it's a good movie with good stunts and you can see the mountains. Who gives a shit?
Who gives a shit, yeah.
There's some mountains in the Bronx. Mm-hmm. Like, use your imagination.
And I would even say, too, like, in addition to that, the fact that this is a like an American and Chinese co-production, and it is a movie where everyone's, while filming, spoke their native language. And so there's, you know, 3-4 languages happening during production. And then it is dubbed over in whatever market they're releasing the movie in. But that means that every character is getting dubbed. Weirdly, including the English characters for the English market, because it involves some rewrites and just overdubbing and going nuts. So even the characters who are visibly speaking English, it doesn't quite sync up.
Yeah, even like all the cops who are like from New York, definitely never spoke another language. I'm like, are they dubbed?
Yeah.
With themselves?
And they are. And there's just something about that where it's like, let's rewrite it, let's redub it for every single market. And who gives a fuck? Like, the length of the movie is different depending on every market, depending on other markets.
Yeah, like, in Hong Kong, it's like 18 minutes longer or something. That's crazy.
And I can't find those.
What do they get?
I can't find those 18 minutes anywhere. Like, anywhere online. It doesn't exist. But it's just so, like, it's just so, who gives a fuck? Like, there is no one who's like, for this, and there's other similar movies of this era of Jackie Chan, no one's like, release the tong cut. Like, no one is like, but where's the original, I need no dubs, only sub, true director vision, without any overdubbing or North American rewrite. It's just like, fuck it. We're Jackie Chan still jumps off that roof to the other roof. It just works.
It does just work, and it's kind of the thing, though, also, like, Jackie Chan is so involved. Like, he does the stunts. He didn't direct it, but, like, you know, it's a Jackie Chan production. Mm-hmm. So I trust that this is the version Jackie wanted me to see. Like, I don't think the studio interfered and were like, Jackie, you can't give them those 18 minutes. I'm like, no, this is what Jackie wanted me to have.
Yeah.
I'm very happy with this present from Jackie Chan of a very good movie that is maybe 18 minutes shorter than what they got in Hong Kong. Maybe it's a bunch of Hong Kong backstory that I wouldn't really care about or that wouldn't play over here for some reason. Apparently there's a whole storyline cut about how he's a cop. So there we go. Cop stuff was cut. Cool.
Sure.
Sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, I'm totally happy with it. I trust Jackie. So much.
Yeah.
So much trust.
And the other thing that he has as a performer, which is why this and some of the other movies can have wonkier writing and weird dubbing, is that Jackie has an ability to display more character and define who his characters are better in action scenes than most actors are able to do with dialogue. Like, he can just expressing in vulnerability and choices that he makes, whether it's like a playful moment where he does a little goof or a moment where he's trying to help or save someone else. And the way that he enacts his character through the action defines him better than most actors can do with dialogue.
Yeah, the body language, you know, is like 80% of how we communicate as people. So, like, I mean, but also, yeah, he still has dialogue that we can understand. Mm. But his, if the sound was off, I would still understand Jackie's characters thoroughly. Like,
yeah.
I could watch this. No, oh, no, the speakers are broken. I'm still going to have a great time watching this Jackie Chan movie. It's going to play perfectly.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he does so much.
Yeah, he knows how to embody it and that it's a little silly when it needs to be. And just little moments like the final chase scene when someone's like, are you okay? And he just pops up and goes, no. Like, it's not a big long line. It's not a big quip, but just no and moving on. And even throughout all of his films, just knowing how to play in any given moment. Yeah.
Yeah, like he will do incredible things like the panicked way that he will save a child who's going to get run over by a hovercraft and then yeet that child. And you're like, that was the right thing to do. But like, yeets with love?
Yeah, it was like a yeet with love.
He didn't yeet that child love like, yeet. Fuck this kid. Like he was like, I'm going to save this kid by yeeting it over to its mom.
Mm-hmm.
And he does so much in that performance of like the panicness and he's getting there and he's sacrificing himself because then he gets run over by a hovercraft. You're like, he's everything.
Yeah.
He is absolutely everything. And also, oh my God, his fashion choices.
Love it.
I
love it.
Love everything he wears in this movie. In such different ways. Like when he
It's all impeccable.
It's all incredible. When he just wakes up in the middle of the night and he's wearing that blue onesie. It can only be described as a onesie.
It's a wrestler's onesie.
Yeah, and he slept in this. And then he goes out to like save the limo in the onesie. And I'm like, this is silly, but also you look incredible. It is a weird, like, how did you pull this off in 1995 kind of look.
How did you pull this off? In any decade.
In any decade.
Like, I honestly think that, like, sometimes we'll watch something and it'll be like something from the 90s or any decade. And it'll be like, that looked good then. Maybe it's come back and it's looked good now. I think that there is not a single year of human existence in which someone has said to themselves, a wrestling pajama onesie is a good look. That's never been the look in any scenario. And he looks fucking flawless in it.
It looks like what someone would wear in like a GQ shoot that no one actually wears.
Mm.
You know, in like a fashion shoot, they were like, and for this one, we're going to put you in this cute onesie and you're going to be at home and we're going to pretend like this is what you wear at home. But of course you don't wear this at home. No one just sits around in a cozy onesie that only goes to your thighs and is also like too tight when you stand up.
Yeah. I don't know what activity this is for.
What? I think the only activity it's for is to make your tank top real tight when you put pants on.
Because
it does make your tank top real tight when you put pants on.
Sure.
And I like that about Jackie Chan's tank tops. Mm-hmm. They're so tight. Also, the black... So
do you think the black tank top was a wrestling onesie?
No, that one's actually a little bit loose.
Oh, okay.
So that one's not.
Okay.
But it still looks really good because when he jumps up on the table, it actually bunches around his waist because I was trying to see if it was a onesie. I was looking for it. So the black one's not a onesie.
I don't like the idea of onesie under jeans. That's a little too, I'm wearing my swimsuit underneath my regular clothes.
I don't mind it when it's just like, you look so good.
Yeah, and no one can look good.
And no one can prove you're wearing a onesie. You've got a tight tuck.
Your Honor, withdrawn.
Withdrawn?
Withdrawn.
The black tank top looks so amazing. He wears his beautiful boyfriend sweater when they're on the date in the park with the big V-neck. Everything he wears is so good in different ways. And, like, you can't be good at stunts and this good in clothes. I don't know if you're picking out your own clothes, but also I think I've seen photos and you dress like this on your own too, Jackie. So maybe you are. I'm blown away. I'm ranting, and I can't get over how good he looks in this movie.
Also, the rarity of wearing a tank top underneath a jacket is something no one does and does not look normal or right. Like, if you wear a tank top under a jacket, it's just like, are you made of dry cleaning? Like, is dry cleaning free for you? You can't do that.
It's also like, when does that come up that you put a tank top on that day and then it's cold? But like,
why
did you wear a tank top if it was a cold day?
But when he pops that denim jacket off and he's wearing a black tank top underneath, I'm like, yeah, this somehow makes sense for you. You are a magic ethereal being.
It also is, like, the weirdest, like, not quite a tank top. Because, like, the neck is so tight in, and then the shoulders are only, like, it's like a short t-shirt, but it's also not.
This is the other thing that fascinated me about that shirt, is that it is a tank top, but the sleeve, like, the armhole is, like, laser tight. Like, it doesn't droop down at all, and it's still a full-size sleeve. Like, yeah, it's a tight shirt with the sleeves cut off.
It's like the sleeve, but it's not ripped like the sleeves were cut off. It was just never made with sleeves.
Fascinated by this shirt.
Brilliant.
Yeah, it's a good look. All of his looks are iconic.
Every look is so good.
Yeah, and things that no one else can pull off, whether it is a wrestling onesie or a tank top under a jacket. Like, Jackie Chan is the athleisure equivalent of what Prince is to dress wear. Where it's like,
oh my God,
no one else can wear these items, and somehow you're wearing them.
But also, Jackie is, as you describe this movie, so unpretentious. Mm. At no point does he think he looks good or bad. Jackie is just wearing his clothes. He just looks like Jackie Chan.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it. And I wish I had that. This is Matrix glasses all over again.
Right.
I wish I could just wear fun sunglasses and feel like I'm just wearing glasses.
The first few moments in the convenience store, when his auntie gives him like a compliment, and he just like looks happy about it. It is just these little moments of vulnerability that other action stars don't and have never done to their characters, where it's just a little moment of humanity where it's like, I received a compliment today, and I'm not a dick about it. I'm not letting it go to my head, but I do feel nice.
Compliments make you feel nice.
Make you feel – and him just like looking in a mirror and just kind of like flexing and feeling good about his own body, hurting no one. And it's comedic because it's a two-way mirror, and you know the people in the office the woman in the office can see him, Elaine in the office can see him. But like, it's just this sweet moment where it's like, yeah, that's just a man alone who feels nice and confident for a moment, and there's a sweet humor to this.
There is such a sweet vulnerability to Jackie Chan in all of his scenes with Elaine, especially in all of his scenes with Danny. Danny, I adore this poor boy in his cushion. This is the tale of a boy and
boy
his
just
need.
Wants a cushion.
He needs another cushion by the end of this. They destroy his new cushion.
It's a rough go.
Also, he gets punched in the face by an adult man. Awful, awful stuff. That kid is incredible, though. And really good at like. He really pulls your heartstrings, like when he's doing the big speech on the couch and his sister's in her bedroom and she comes out crying, like really has an innocence that pulls your heartstrings. But then also the comedy is so good, like when he throws Jackie bigger and bigger weapons.
Chef's kiss. So good.
It was the only fight scene that had any jokes like that,
right,
of like increasing size of anything. But it was so funny, just helmet. What was the second thing? I think it was a crutch. And then the third one was a wrench.
like a massive wrench for like truck tires. Wrench. Yeah.
Like there's no way Danny could throw that.
No.
With
there's
his
no
little
scenario.
Spindly arms.
Yeah. This little boy cannot throw a massive truck wrench.
No, but very funny the idea that he did. That he was just like, here you go. Like I don't know if I could throw that to Jackie Chan across a room.
Yeah.
It would fuck up our room.
The comedy of this movie and of Jackie Chan's movies of this era is. It's so Looney Tunes, which I absolutely adore. Whether it is that two-way mirror scene.
So cute.
Where it's like, it's cute, let's see it. And then Jackie coming into the room being like, I've learned a new piece of information the audience know. I'm going to go outside. We see him reiterate the information to himself. Just this kind of double take act structure to be like, here is the premise. Here is the concept. Here is the joke. And now we're re-emphasizing what just occurred. Or the scaling up of the weapons is a very Bugs Bunny cartoon kind of an idea. There's just, it's so cartoonish in how they do comedy. And there's such a charm and a joy to that.
Yes, it is. It is cartoonish. Again, though, it is oddly at odds with how dark the gang is.
Let's get into the gang stuff and how dark
that
is.
Okay, the gang is so dark because they're like irredeemably dark, which I do think is a downfall of this movie because they're not like people who are down on their luck and are forced to sell drugs or are forced to like rob people at gunpoint for money. They are choosing to terrorize a stranger for days. Like, that is not a thing you need to do to survive.
These aren't survival street toughs. These are, like, kids who today would have, like, they would have gone to Fyre Festival, and they're, like, a little mad about the music festival not being what they wanted it to be. Like,
yeah, these are people who are struggling and have, like, taken the only route they can.
Right.
These are monsters.
Yeah.
Like when it starts and they're just street racing, I'm like, oh, that's absolutely fine. Whatever. You're street racing. For your own money, you're not hurting anyone. You destroyed a couple cars, but whatever. But like to spend 3 days trying to murder a man because he wouldn't let you steal chocolate bars is
like pure psychopath. Like you're a terror of the community. Like you are horrifying.
Yeah, because it's not a turf war. It's not a guy. It's not a cop who was threatening to arrest you. It's just a guy who was like, don't steal chocolate bars. And 20 of you said, we are going to go into chaotic madness and destroy your life.
We'll burn this whole city to the ground to make sure you've learned a lesson about stopping me from taking a Kit Kat.
Yeah, specifically a Kit Kat.
It was
too much, and it was too far to redeem the people.
Yeah, I agree.
They needed to do lesser crimes that were more understandable.
Yeah, because they're offered redemption at the end, and I think there is a version of this story where that works.
Yes,
and
there is.
And it's nice that Jackie Chan offers redemption to these irredeemable characters, but it's like they've left you to die multiple times. They actively are looking to do a murder.
Yeah, they are trying to murder. They lured you into a trap. They faked kidnapping Nancy and lured you into an alley to try to kill you.
For fun. They didn't even rob him.
You had no money. Mm. You had nothing they wanted. This was pre-diamonds. Pre-whole diamond thing.
Not only did he not have money, they didn't even check him for money. They made no active attempt at a robbery.
Oh, yeah, no. Nothing
like,
at all.
He could have had $1 million in his pocket. They would have left it to burn because they just want chaos.
Real Joker-esque.
Yeah.
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 Yeah. Not, yeah. So that, I think, is one of the biggest faults of this movie. I don't mind that it gets a little dark. I feel like the darkness could have been just held for the much worse diamond guys who will throw you in a wood chipper.
Yes.
Because it really doesn't feel like the gang is out of their league with the wood chipper guys because they also do intense murders.
Yeah.
If these were people who do not do intense murders, right, and then now they're like, oh God, wood chipper guys are after us who throw you in a wood chipper. But like, I feel like they could take these guys.
I think they have higher numbers. I think that I think it's like a street gang and the mafia. And I think the mafia has visibly better weapons.
They got great weapons.
The street gang, I think, has like two guns that they share.
They do have a timeshare on that one gun, yeah.
And it's mostly bats.
It's usually Angelo's day for the gun, but some days it's not his day for the gun.
Whereas the mafia people all have Uzis and grenades. Mm. And I'm going to put money on Uzis and grenades in that scenario.
And wood chippers.
And wood chippers, which are horrifying.
You know, you don't have a wood chipper unless you're really well off. You don't casually purchase a wood chipper.
Yeah, you know, that's not an impulse buy.
No, I've never.
That is in no way an impulse
buy. I've never once almost bought a wood chipper.
I did once, but I live a pretty lavish lifestyle, frankly.
You also have seen this movie a bunch. You're probably like, oh, like in Rubble in the Bronx.
Like in Rubble. Not Fargo. I don't go to Fargo. When people are like, body on a wood chipper, and I'm like, Rubble in the Bronx is the movie
Rubble
you're
in the Bronx,
of.
You're thinking of that
Obviously,
one.
You're thinking of Rumble in the Bronx.
It was really upsetting.
Yeah. So yeah, they put a guy through a wood chipper. Very dark, but it does work for the mafia segment. And I think that the structure of the farce, the very dark farce that they're going for in this movie, of the like, oops, I've started a thing with a street gang. Oops, the street gang stole some diamonds from the mafia. Oops, the mafia are coming after me while pretending to be cops. It is a great triangle of conflict that I think, even though it gets way too dark and there are some elements that need to change, it is a structure and it is bones that work and it comes to a head really well. I like this idea of like, I'm teaming up now with these guys who I've had a problem with to stop this much bigger problem.
I think that really does work on paper, and it works mostly here, but it could work a little bit better. But yeah, and it also feels nice that the gang has been so hectic and crazy, and then they kind of get their comeuppance when they meet the bigger rival of the mafia. Mm. So you do kind of actually are okay with Jackie helping them because you're like, they've gotten in over their heads.
Right.
Even though sometimes you're like, they could take them. But then you see the Uzis and the grenades and the no-nonsense murdering.
Right, right.
The way they're much more organized. They just throw their guns and gloves out the window and they're like, can't pin it on us.
And they have lawyers and shit like that. And it's like, the street gang were going to maybe kill Jackie, but the mafia sent a human being ground down in a trash bag back to his friends. And that is a step up. Even if the street gang went too far, this is way too fucking far. Oh my God.
Yeah. So it explains it a little better. Mm-hmm. Here's a thing I love about the street gang, which we were making fun of a bit watching it. And the more I thought about it, I actually really liked it. I love how multicultural the street gang is.
Yes.
The street gang is, there's some white guys, there's some Latino guys, Chinese guys, some First Nations guys. Like, this is anyone who lives around here, you can be in whatever this gang is. I don't think they have a name for the gang. Anyone is welcome.
Yeah.
And I actually really, really like that about this gang from kind of like a problematic stereotype view.
Okay.
Because if you make a gang like just like the black guys
or the Latino guys. They are not a race-based gang.
They're not a race-based gang, so there's no problematic nature to them. You don't want to be like, black guys cause crimes or Latino guys cause crimes. By having a fully diverse gang, you're like, right. People cause crimes.
It is not a racial stereotype of the neighborhood that they live in, which easily it could be.
Yes.
And a lot of movies of this era and ilk fall into, where it's just like, oh no, it is the triad, and now we're dealing with like a very specific ethnic stereotype.
And they're not even really going after Jackie or the market for being Asian or different, because there are Asian people in their gang. It's really just they're there.
Yes, and I even think that like they weirdly play off a kind of dark humor with that, like when the convenience store is being attacked and Elaine is like, you speak Cantonese, help me, and the guy's like, yeah, I speak Cantonese, I'm still in a gang. And I'm like, this dude being incredulous about being stereotyped into not being in a gang.
Just because I'm Cantonese, I can't be in a gang?
Like a wild circle of I don't even know what, of breaking down and reconstructing racial stereotypes that I think was darkly hilarious. But yeah, I agree with you. I like that it does at times make the gang seem, and this is also due to their hideout, their dance parties, and other things that they do. I'm like, seems more like a club. But in some ways, it's a club.
It's a little bit like Ninja Turtles Foot Clan, when they're like, all the Foot Clan is like recruiting teens. I'm like, you can skateboard, or you can dance, or you can smoke cigarettes.
This is, in almost every regard, a Ninja Turtles movie that the Ninja Turtles just happen to not show
Jackie
up
Chan?
In. Oh. Yeah, like, they just don't make it here in time. and Jackie has to handle it.
They missed this one.
They missed this one. They were busy doing other shit.
They're fighting Krang this week. Yeah. They're in space. Sorry, Jackie.
Something was going on. Yeah, this is very much the energy of a Ninja Turtles movie.
Yeah, because the Ninja Turtles can be dark sometimes, too. Yeah,
but so a great multicultural gang. I do think there were a few white people in there playing ethnicities that they were not, but...
It's hard to know when it's all mixed together.
And it was all happening pretty fast.
Yeah, because sometimes it's like stunt doubles. Genuine. But a lot of it was genuine. Yeah, it really reminds me, it's a weird inverse in a great way of what Brooklyn Nine-Nine does. Because I've always loved this about Brooklyn, and the showrunners have said they did it on purpose. Everyone who is a person of color, they wanted to have more than one so that no one was a stereotype of anything. That's why there's two Latino women and there's two black men. And they're very different from each other. Like Rosa and Amy on Brooklyn are polar opposites of each other. So at no point are you like a stereotype of Latina women.
Sure.
But when you have a group, you kind of have to do the inverse. And right. You have to be like, it's a bunch of different people.
Sure.
So that no one gets stereotyped.
Gotcha. They went hard in the other direction.
It's brilliant. And it's one of the few movies I've seen with a gang that didn't make me feel uncomfortable about the casting.
Yeah, I feel like this gang legitimately had nothing offensive to say about gangs. And that is so fucking rare.
Like, they're bad in general?
Yeah, that the writers of this movie were like, you know how gangs are people who are like, whoopsie, and I have no other social prejudices or commentary to overlay on that.
You know how gangs hate Jackie Chan.
Yeah.
That's the worst thing they have to say about gangs.
They like Kit Kats, and they hate Jackie Chan. But they will push Bronx Coover into the ocean to get a Kit Kat.
Break me off a piece of that gang.
That gang.
Yeah, so love the gang. Mm-hmm. It's brilliant, and more movies need to do this.
Yeah,
absolutely. Less racially motivated gangs, more groups.
Yeah, and a wonderful fight scene in the convenience store as well. Like, that is so well choreographed. Just these quick hits, the immediacy.
The power in the hits.
Yeah.
When Jackie does a push kick, front kick, and will just throw guys across the room, but I don't think they're being pulled by the rope thing, because, like, they didn't have CG to take the ropes out back then.
Yeah, I don't think those were pulls.
I don't know how, like, did Jackie kick them that hard?
Sometimes they're just taking the hits. Like, that is the stunt team. They're just, and like, you know, they're throwing their own body back and like personally reacting to it. But some of these, I think, are not wire pulls.
Yeah.
I think they are like legit taking the hits. The other thing too, that Stanley Tong, who directed this movie, and did some of the Police Story, maybe all the Police Story movies or all the OG Police Story movies. But anyway, one thing the director of this does for this and several Jackie Chan movies that is a style that's kind of gone away and I like, which is repeating frames. So one thing, and I'll make this as quick as possible, not to get into techno babble, but basically, like, in a movie where, like, someone goes to punch and you see it from the side and then the camera cuts to the other, to a different angle. A lot of movies now will skip a frame so it looks like they're punching really fast.
Mm.
So basically it's like someone punches and then the fist kind of skips forward for a frame or two when they change camera angles and it looks like that punch was wicked fast. Jackie Chan movies, Stanley Tong and a lot of the other directors do the exact opposite, which is when he punches and then the camera moves, it rewinds a couple of frames. So it seems like the impact lasts longer, which makes it look like every hit hits way harder. Because when it touches someone's stomach and you see it from the side, and then it cuts to a different camera slightly over, you see it hit the stomach again, and it seems like that hit really follows through and lasts longer. And I really like that style. And sometimes it's like overdone to the extreme in a fun way, like in this movie when Jackie jumps from the rooftop to that balcony.
Oh yeah.
And it rewinds like four times. It is a 1 second jump that is 20 seconds of movie because we keep rewinding and seeing it from different angles. But on a smaller scale, that's what they do with punches and hits. And I really like that.
That makes a lot of sense. And like, we should show the jump from different angles. He did it once and it was incredible. And they're like, we filmed it from four angles, so you're going to watch every single one of them because you're going to appreciate what Jackie Chan just did.
You got it. Look at this.
Look at this.
Look at this.
Look at this. You are going to appreciate what is happening right now. We're not going to just breeze past this jump.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to see how hard. No wires. No wires, people.
None.
But yeah, the hits feel so hard. Like, Like we've also talked before about how Jackie Chan, like, will just film the entire fight. You can see it. It's not inserts of the punches. It's not inserts of the things. It's, like, the full fight mostly. It's so easy to see, and it's so fast. But the inserts are great because – and also Jackie's just very good about either actually hitting or just hitting so close.
Right.
Because so many fight scenes you'll watch, you'll be like, well, that wasn't anywhere near the person's face. But, like, these guys are taking hits. I mean, you see Jackie take hits in the bloopers. He'll get hit in the face. So it's it's incredible, and it's cool that they want it to look better instead of just being like, I'm superhumanly fast. Like,
right.
No, we want it to feel like a fight.
Yeah.
And to feel the impacts.
And I think part of it, too, is how much choreography they involve with body blows, which is something that is less glamorous but more visceral. Mm-hmm. And it's something that a lot of modern action just avoids. Because a punch to the head, an actor who's not actually getting punched in the head can just snap their neck, and it's easier to sell. There's way more of a whiplash movement. And if you use the right camera angle, it's easy to hide that there was no actual contact and you just snap your head. Whereas the choreography in this, it involves a lot more body blows, where with the other actor, they can pad up. They can wear padding underneath their shirt and their jacket and hide padding. And Jackie and a talented stunt person and a talented martial artist can actually come in contact. So now you're not trying to sell a no hit. Mm-hmm. Now you're trying to sell a soft hit. And that is a world of difference to be able to, like, pad up, softly hit, and sell that versus having to avoid contact completely, which is a lot of modern action.
Yeah, yeah. That's a great point. I hadn't thought about it like that. But you're right. They're taking the hits.
Mm-hmm.
Just an entirely different style of fighting than we do these days. And it's so cool. And you're like, but it's so dangerous. I'm also insane. Like, not mad. We don't do it a lot anymore. Mm-hmm. It's, you see the bloopers and you're like, how many stunt people got hurt on this movie? Like, you know, they wanted to. I'm not saying it wasn't safe, just their style is different.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it is something that can have a resurgence and is manageable in practical hand-to-hand choreography. Like, when you're watching the convenience store fight scene, that's one that doesn't have any bloopers other than, like, you know, a goof or two where it's like the guy with the rubber knife accidentally drops it or, like, taps Jackie a little. But then you watch stuff like the motorcycle stunts, and it's like people broke legs, like people broke bones. People were severely injured.
Jackie let a motorcycle run through his legs with crazy timing as he jumped through a car. Like, unnecessarily dangerous.
Whereas the more grounded hand-to-hand stuff, like that convenience store fight, when Jackie is doing his jacket stuff and grabbing the other person's arms and stuff with the jackets while landing blows, it is an influence that has continued to this year with Shang-Chi.
I was just about to say. Yeah.
Where Shang-Chi's jacket choreography on the bus scene is very much inspired by the jacket choreography of the convenience store fight in Rumble in the Bronx, because it's something that it takes a lot of people doing meticulous, exhaustive work to plan and prepare and do it safely. But there's no amount of wrong you can do it in which someone explodes or is vaulted off of a building. You know, like, it just takes a lot of people doing a lot of hard work, and that is something we can do today. But some of the stuff, like jumping from a rooftop to rooftop, is just like,
there's no reason not to use a wire now.
Yeah.
We'll CG the wire out.
Absolutely. I'm on the side of the insurance companies that are telling your film to put this fucker on a wire. Put them on wires now. Please. Please have as many safety precautions as possible.
Please, Jackie Chan, do not let a giant hovercraft run over you.
Mm-hmm.
That's insane.
Yeah.
Wild stuff. Yeah, but you're absolutely right. Like, and everyone talks about the Shang-Chi bus fight as the best part of the movie.
Yeah.
Like, the movie's good throughout, but the bus fight is just leaps and bounds so incredible. Because as you said, yes, that's a great point. It's very safe, but it's very real.
Mm.
No one's going to get seriously hurt in that fight, but it's so well choreographed and it's so fun and it's so real because they did the whole fight.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Wonderful. Yeah. Jackie Chan.
Great stuff. And even some of the, like, the early, not prototype, but like this very early parkour type of movement that Jackie Chan does. And it's pre-parkour with any kind of public consciousness. But just the chase scenes that Jackie will do on foot as well, and how he'll use the environment, I think was very noteworthy at the time and still stands up as incredibly noteworthy today.
like little things that are so fast, like when he just needs to get over like a fence and then he'll do like a pop, pop, pop off like three walls. And you're just like, that's a video game move. Mm. Like humans shouldn't be able to go up that way.
Yeah.
That's not how, like, you should just be able to jump straight up and that's how we get places. But Jackie just doing these incredibly fast moves up a wall, no wire, just his own body weight, 1995, pre-parkour, just... It's crazy. The little things are so much harder than we think they are that he's doing.
And I think it really just goes as a credit to, like, the mind that he has. And obviously, like, a dancer's fluidity to a certain degree. Mm-hmm. But pre-parkour being an art form where it's, like, now with – like, you can take parkour classes. You can take lessons. There are instructors. There are legends in the industry who can teach you how to do certain things. There are names for the type of movements and how one would vault over this shape of an object versus a different shape. Whereas at this time, parkour was not an international art form. It's just Jackie looking at an object and being like, I think I can do a jump, flip, crab walk. Like, it's just him figuring it out in his own weird, like, math gif, like, just seeing the shit in the air mind.
But if the lady was smart in the math gif. Mm-hmm. Yeah, if the lady really figured out the math, mm-hmm. it's got to be a better gif.
He's beautiful minding.
He's beautiful. Those weren't real, but yeah. It's incredible. It doesn't make any sense. Yeah, but he definitely had to practice a lot.
Oh,
but
yeah.
Just he moves in a way no one else can move. It's crazy.
Yeah, it's crazy. It's special, and it's something that stands out.
It's something that stands out. I will also say we're talking about, like, their Jackie Chan's kind of influences on everything, and we're talking about the fights. I will say this hovercraft ending is straight out of a Fast and Furious movie, kind of ridiculous. Like, this, a giant chase on not a small hovercraft, like a giant industrial size commercial hovercraft.
Oh, she's a big boy.
She's a big boy. So for the hovercraft to be a water chase scene and then move into the streets and be this unstoppable tank-like force, like, for about 10 minutes, I'm like, this is a great Fast and Furious movie with, like, an object they've never used. The Fast and Furious have gone to space, but they've never had a hovercraft race. And that's a missed opportunity. I absolutely, I kind of don't love it in some ways, but I also really love it. I don't think it fits the film, but I think it's wonderful.
I think it is definitely, like, visibly the biggest and most expensive thing that the film does.
Especially once it gets on land. In the water, I'm like, yeah, you hired a boat. But
I think that, I agree with you. Tonally, it doesn't necessarily fit the rest of the film. The stunts do, but tonally, it doesn't. It's just kind of a very big piece. But I do love that, though. It's so unique. Like, I think if someone says hovercraft to me, I think of this action scene.
So I'm going to say wood chipper, and I'm going to say hovercraft.
And I'm thinking of Rumble in the Bronx right away. Like, it is the level of, I would say, like, the tank chase in GoldenEye. Like, that level of, like, oh, fuck, I haven't seen anyone do anything like this. It is just, it is remarkable in its uniqueness. And if another movie had a hover chase scene using that type of vehicle, No, everyone would be like, oh, you're just doing that. Like, if another action movie had a tank chase through city streets, it would be like, oh, you're doing GoldenEye? Like, there's nothing else to compare it to. It's done. It's done forever.
We've done tank and we've done hovercraft chase scene. It's over forever. The incredible thing about it to me also is it's the part of the movie where Jackie does the least, and it's also right as he broke his ankle in real life. It almost felt like they were like had to add it. They're like, oh, we have to add a huge non-stunt piece for Jackie. His ankle's broken.
Right.
But, like, they definitely already planned it. He was jumping onto the hovercraft when he broke his ankle.
Yeah. So but it was wild all part
that,
of it. But
it's wild that probably the next, like, week of filming was no Jackie ankle they were needed, like, anyway.
Let's get a Ferrari and a cool sword, and he's going to drive at it.
He can drive a Ferrari. Yeah.
I don't know if his ankle was broken when he did the water stunts as well, because getting dragged behind that, he is moving at a clip. Holy shit.
They are going. Yeah, and he's on his back for part of it. Like, when he's standing, he's got some, like, shoes that seem to have, like, a little bit of a ski in them that's, like, definitely helping. But, yeah, when he's getting full-on dragged.
Yeah.
Wow. That's got to hurt real bad.
To the point that, like, when that scene is over, his jean jacket on the back is split in two. It's eviscerated on the back.
It's ruined.
And on most movies, I would be like, wardrobe came in and gave you a second battle-damaged jean jacket that is weathered and made to look like. But I'm like, that might have just been what Jackie wore. And it friction burnt off his back. And obviously, I could tell in a few scenes, like, he's just like, he looks like a box. He's a little more square than he normally is. I'm like, oh, you're fully padded up. Like, you are wearing a leather crash suit underneath that. So the friction, you're not getting any friction burns or anything like that, but you're still feeling the impact to a high degree. But yeah, I think that jean jacket might have actually burned through.
I 100% believe he burned through the jean jacket. It also doesn't protect, like, the back of your head when he was, like, his head was getting bounced around for a bit before he got up on his feet.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so the hovercraft scene is great and also doesn't fit the movie at all. But what are you going to do? You going to cut the hovercraft? Nah. I wonder if the Hong Kong people got 18 more minutes of hovercraft.
You think maybe it just that's
really destroyed Vancouver.
I can't see them cutting more hovercraft. The amount of money you spend on driving a hovercraft through Vancouver, I realize it's cheaper than actually filming in the Bronx, but it still ain't fucking free.
And then driving it through a golf course.
Yes.
You had to get that thing up to a golf course.
Golf course, beach. Frankly, even like the ocean scenes aren't cheap. Like, they still had the Coast Guard and a shit ton of boats.
They did have a lot of cop boats, huh?
Yeah. So they
cop boats. They had a lot of. They really spent their money well.
They had a lot of work going into this. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think one character that I just want to like give a quick appreciation for is Elaine, who purchases the convenience store.
Oh, Elaine.
Yeah.
First day on the job and she gets a gang attack.
Anita Mu, I believe. Phenomenal job of this character. Is also in the Drunken Master movies as well.
She gets so much more to do in that.
Really, really good comedic performer. Mm-hmm. Phenomenal physically, like. That temper tantrum in the destroyed building with your pants around your ankles is just phenomenal.
Yeah, her and Jackie have really great chemistry. They really bounce off each other well. Her comedy is, it's more traditionally comedic, whereas Jackie is more like a dancer, fighter comedic in his physical comedy. She is very traditionally like theatrically comedic, and it's really, she's really, really great. And also, but like, she does sincerely, she's not so comedic that you don't think she's not real.
Yeah.
Like, the uncle's a little over the top and you don't really feel he's fleshed out, but I do believe that she's a woman who just had her business destroyed and she's sad and she's upset and her apartment's been torn down and it's funny, but I'm also like, this poor woman.
Yeah, she's doing a good character piece, whereas the uncle is like, might be too big. It's sketch comedy. It's a little out of this world, which a lot of this film is, but it still might be too much from the uncle. Whereas, yeah, she does find that perfect line of character and comedy, and it's brilliant to see.
Yeah, she's wonderful. I don't like that she disappears for like 45 minutes, which is a long time in an hour and a half movie, because there's like the first attack on the convenience store, and then she's really gone until the second attack.
Right.
It's just Jackie and Danny and Nancy, the girl.
Nancy is the girl. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that was part of the problem, was that like they didn't really know what to do with Nancy versus Elaine. They were just like,
who's he gonna end up with?
Who's he gonna somewhat flirtatious with Elaine, and then it's like, there's Nancy's here. Elaine's gone. Don't worry about it.
Nancy needs a redemption arc. Elaine's the safe bet.
Yeah. Nancy needs more from this story. Elaine is just kind of someone who bought the
convenience
store.
Elaine's going to be just fine. I like how this movie doesn't work well with time sometimes. I think it's very funny. I'll explain what I mean. So Jackie Chan gets attacked by the gang in the alley, and it's like nighttime. And they're a pretty nocturnal gang, I assume. And he wakes up in the morning, and he's like been patched up, and he's going to go to work. And it's clearly daytime. And then the gang shows up again. And I'm like, this gang needs to sleep.
Ah, right.
It's the middle of the day. You're a nocturnal gang. You're wide awake at 8 a.m. bothering this guy on his way to work. Mm. Unless you're on a bunch of uppers and just haven't slept yet.
I mean, that is...
That's an option.
That's an option, but it also goes back to what I was saying. It's more a club. It does feel like they almost murdered Jackie, and it was like, all right, everyone, go home, get a good 8 hours. I know it's about 2 a.m. now, but we could start at 10. We can start at 10 if we go home and get fresh for tomorrow.
We got to clock in early, terrorize Jackie again.
Got to be fresh
for it. Or we're not going to get our paycheck. We're not going to get our badge of terrorizing Jackie this week. So, and then the other one that I absolutely love is White Dragon, the mafia bad guy. So he is in the Bronx and he tears down Elaine's business. Mm-hmm. It's down. Jackie gets a call. Then Jackie, an hour later, calls him and he's on a golf course in an hour.
There's an audience watching.
Yeah, it's like a tournament.
There's a crowd. Yeah.
It's not his personal golf course.
No.
So I just don't feel like, I feel like you can't get anywhere in New York in an hour, let alone from the Bronx to a golf course.
All right. I like that. Yeah, no, that makes sense to me. Yeah, there's definitely a lot of weird time jumps. I thought you were going to say Jackie's healing Wolverine-like healing abilities.
He did also have some Wolverine healing abilities.
Yeah, he lost most of his blood and then, like, slept for as much as the gang. It was late night to daytime, so he got a good 6 hours of rest after losing a few pints of blood.
And then he had the garage fight.
And then had the garage fight, yeah.
So, like, he's sore. He's got no blood. Mm. It's not so much how much blood he lost. It was that, like, the cuts were all gone, like, by the time the diamond heist happened.
Yes. Yeah.
No cuts.
No. I do like that when he jumps off the roof of the parking garage to the other one and they're looking at him, I do like that all of his wounds have opened up. That, like,
his arms are bleeding.
Shit like that. Mm-hmm. So mm-hmm. I do like that this chase scene has taken, but, like, that should be Daredevil in the hallway level. And, like, and it's strange because Jackie is exactly the actor and character that would show that type of vulnerability. Like, he's famously one of the few action stars of the 90s who was willing to show that he was hurt by things, which is part of what adds so much charm and charisma to his characters. But, yeah, there was just no consistency in the writing there. He's just kind of magically heals up after a day with his Wolverine X-Factor.
Yeah, especially because he didn't live in New York and he was supposed to go back to Hong Kong. So I was like, how long have you been here?
His uncle was supposed to be on his honeymoon for a week, and then he was going back to Hong Kong.
So you do have some kind of crazy back-to-tank Wolverine healing energy going on.
He's in the Boba Fett back-to-tank.
This is how he stays so young and good-looking.
This makes a lot of sense to me, this tracks.
I'm pretty good. I have one thing. I have nothing to say about it. Mm-hmm. But
lay it on me,
though.
What do you got?
We're talking about how this movie was cartoony for a second. I do have to bring up how crazy it was that club had a tiger. The fact that Nancy is not making more money for Dancing with a Tiger is wild. Mm. That she can't get her little brother a cushion on tiger dancing money. You got to get a better agent, girl.
And especially when that seemed like a pretty well put together nightclub. Like
that wasn't the gang's nightclub.
That was not a seedy nightclub. Like, it didn't even seem like a nightclub where it's like, this is a nightclub where we do gang activities. Well, we sell drugs here. It's actually a front. It seemed like this is popular among young people. We charge $20 a drink.
There's a tiger.
There is a cover charge and a lineup at the fucking door. We've got a goddamn tiger. We've got the hottest DJ every weekend. Mm-hmm. Like, it seemed like a club that had its shit together.
Yeah, Nancy's gang actually looked like they didn't fit in.
Yeah, yeah.
The crowd
allowed in a club like that.
Yeah, the crowd that was there looked like a little bit like more expensive than them.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm,
mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
So, but I was just like, this movie just, to get a tiger when it's not relevant to the plot is crazy. Like, the tiger doesn't attack anyone. The tiger's not part of a fight scene later. They were just like, can we get a tiger?
Like, I'm pretty sure exotic pets are illegal in New York, and you could not legally have a tiger in a nightclub. But this nightclub gave me the vibe. I'm like, you found the permits. Like, you're a well-run business.
Yeah, like, the tiger seemed cool with it. The tiger seemed stimulated. He's getting activities.
Sure.
He's enriched.
It's a good life.
He's trying to kill Nancy in her little cage.
Yeah. But
they're having fun.
These gang people, none of them need money. They're just in it to watch the world burn.
They just want to watch the world burn. Yeah, they didn't even rob the store.
No, they never rob anyone.
They wanted to get some free chocolate bars, but they weren't like, give me the cash and the till. Mm. None of that. No.
No,
they're living off fumes.
The only financial-based thing that they do is street racing for money, for a grand, which isn't even that much. And I know that this was the 90s, and it's like a grand actually was more, but it still isn't extravagant enough.
Your gang is like 20 people. That's not much each.
Yeah.
That's not That's not going around very far.
No.
Yeah, I don't know how you afford those pinball machines and stuff.
Yeah, the crazy hangout that you have. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's going to be it for Rumble in the Bronx. Let's go in for the close. Let's ask the final question of what would you change? So now that we've discussed everything we discussed, what would you change about this if you could change anything? But before we do ask the final question, we'll remind you, as we do every week, to please follow, subscribe, rate and review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Podcast Addict, wherever you get your fine podcast listenings.
Please, we need those reviews. We need to know we're doing a good job. I need the verification.
We need it.
So yeah, and it really helps move the charts. It lets other people know that people like us. They don't take our word for it. I don't know why.
They should take our word for it.
But they'll take your word for it.
They will.
People will listen to you. It means a lot.
And we read them, and it is a delight. And I was looking at them the other day, and I was like, yeah, that's good stuff.
Thanks, guys.
That's good stuff. Yeah.
These are real nice. More, please.
Let me get a UK one. It's been a minute since we got a UK one.
If you're in the UK, we're calling you out.
I was looking at it, and I was like, man, it's been like a year since we got a UK review. Like,
What's going on over in the UK? We got an Australia one the other day. That was cool.
Yeah, Australia.
You Aussies?
Appreciate you, Australia.
We see you.
UK, get on it, girl.
You're getting beat by Australia.
Come on. You can't have that. Commonwealth. We got to get on it. So, please.
Please.
Please, rate and review. Makes a world of difference
to
us.
Do it for your country.
And if you want to support the podcast monetarily, you can do that over on Patreon. You head over to Patreon. You can kick in a buck, two, five, ten, whatever is in your budget. You'll get different levels of exclusive bonuses for doing that. At the $10 hero level, you get a bonus episode of this podcast every month.
You get it every single month, and you get access to all the old ones. We cover a topic we never cover on this old podcast. It'll be an ad-free episode. This month we did Witcher Season 2 because December was jam-packed full
Jacked.
Of stuff. In December we did Matrix 2? 3? Mm-hmm.
It was two, I believe. It was
one of the Matrixes.
No, we did the third
one. It was
one.
Three?
It was okay. Three. We did Revolutions, yes.
Revolutions. Mm-hmm. Resurrection? No, that was 4.
Resurrection
Fuck.
Was 4.
I hate the Matrix movies. You can go listen to some Matrix stuff on our Patreon.
We did the third one. Patreon.com/FromSuperHeroes. Sign up. There's no obligations. So if you got $10 in the budget this month and you want to listen to some extra episodes, go there. Choose the $10 level. Listen to what you have time for. The budget changes next month. Cancel. Change. Drop it.
Don't even worry about it.
You do you. Go get some cool bonus content, even if it's just for a month. Patreon.com/FromSuperHeroes. That's patreon.com/FromSuperHeroes. And now, to go in for the close, ask the final question. Diana, what would you change?
Most of my change is the ending. In my change, Jackie does not go to the cops at the end. Jackie solos it against the mafia. He finds out where the gang is being held hostage. He helps the gang escape, and then they all fight the mafia together. It's more of a bonding experience. It's more of a redemption for the gang. Elaine also helps, and Elaine gets to keep those goddamn diamonds and
repair
fund,
the
and
convenience
repair
store.
The convenience store. And the gang also, and she doesn't get it renovated because the gang comes and repairs the store.
Ooh.
Yeah, you like that?
Love it.
You like that?
Love it. The gang is about the community now.
Jackie saves the gang and the gang to show their thank you and have been changed and they see the error of their ways. They come and they fix up the convenience store. But she also still gets to keep the diamonds because she's been through a lot. Or at least like 3. Just enough. So the cops are never involved. Because I also don't like that the cops are there during the hovercraft chase because it just doesn't feel like you need Jackie. You're like, the cops are going to get them. There's so many cops, and I do need to feel like it's just Jackie on his own. What are you going to do? You're going to get in a Ferrari. You're going to find a big sword. Like, there's no reason for all these cops to be here. It's supposed to be Jackie's story. So, yeah, no cops. Jackie and the gang have to kind of band together to stop the mafia. Elaine helps. The gang fixes the convenience store, and that's what I would change. Yeah, all the stunts are great. I'm not going to tell Jackie how to do stunts. But I'm going to fix the writing a little bit.
It would have been a wild flex if I was like, what do you change? And you were like, the stunts. Here's the problem with them, and here's what I would do if I were Jackie Chan.
No. No. Jackie, no, I didn't say that. Jackie, you're so good at stunts. Andrew, what would you change? The stunts?
I'm going to leave the stunts alone.
I think they're fine. I guess.
I love your change, and I'm 100% on board with that. Getting the gang not just to neutral, but to help the community, I think is a way better place to end up with them.
They're going
to
get that boy a cushion for his wheelchair. Mm-hmm. They're going to do it all.
For me, my change would be that Nancy doesn't leave the gang because it's kind of just a wasted, repeated storyline where we do the you're better than this life twice.
Yeah.
So it's like Jackie is like gets to know Nancy and earns Nancy's respect by being a nice guy and is like, you can do better, choose better. And she's like, great. And then Jackie repeats that same story beat with the entirety of a gang. And I don't know why we need to revisit that same theme and that same story twice. And then it also makes all of this one-on-one Nancy time for a story we're about to repeat in an area of the movie where Elaine is missing and she is the comedy and the a fun over-the-top pairing for Jackie. Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, so mm-hmm. I say that that Nancy doesn't like maybe she's in the other room and sees that it's Jackie and she knows she patches him but he never sees her. I think until he saves the gang, he shouldn't see Nancy, and Nancy shouldn't see him and have to confront herself.
Okay. Very bold choices. Really taking a lot out then.
Yeah. So I think that, like, right up until the end when they decide to go against the mafia together, should Nancy and him have a confrontation where, like, she's like, I need to change.
Hmm. I can get behind that. It kind of removes them having any growth together. But, like, I get what you're saying, that it is repeated twice. Mm-hmm. Nancy changes, the whole gang changes. You can really have an economy of storytelling where that all happens at once. Mm-hmm. Or Nancy helps the gang change because Jackie's changed her.
Right, right.
Something one that, of like, the, let her be
the Jackie surrogate.
Yeah.
As opposed to sending Jackie in to do the exact same thing a second time.
She can pay it forward somehow.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Something like that. Yeah, it's not clean.
Yeah, it's not clean, and my change isn't clean, because for the most part, I really enjoy this movie, and it doesn't need to be completely adjusted in every facet until it's perfect, because it's occasional sloppy, unpretentious fun is what is the charm.
What if we CGI'd out the mountains?
Fuck it.
Just
no.
To make it good.
Absolutely
no, Andrew,
not,
there
I say.
There can't be mountains.
I say absolutely not. It Let him have his PC brand cola.
Guys, that's our cola.
That's
just
our cola.
Just so you know. And that's what we're drinking up here.
But yeah, that's my simple change, is that we don't need to repeat that story twice.
It is repetitive.
I don't necessarily know how to enact that, but it's repeated twice, and cut it.
It definitely is. Hmm. I love it.
I like that. I love yours. Yours is way better than mine.
Thank you.
Yeah.
I feel like that's weird because it's your movie. But you know what? It's really hard to change a thing you love.
Yeah, I'm just like,
you see it as perfect.
I'm along for the ride. I'm just like, I like this.
Yeah.
Good
next
day.
Week on mine, I'll be like, don't you talk shit about my movie.
Yeah. So next week.
Next week, I'm doing A Knight's Tale. An old classic.
A Knight's Tale. It's a Diana pick. Next week.
Medieval baby.
We're talking about A Knight's Tale next week on the podcast with a Diana favorite. Until then, if you want to hear more of us, once again, hit up our Patreon, patreon.com/FromSuperheroes. This month's exclusive episode was The Witcher Season 2. Next week, we'll be talking about A Knight's Tale. If you want to get a hold of us, you can reach me on Twitter at Ivamy, Ivimey.
You can reach me at Words of Diana.
And you can reach both of us at From Superheroes. Check out her pinned tweet. We'll talk to y'all next week.
See you on A Knight's Tale. Bye.